This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. In 1990, a gaggle of curious teens walked into what was then the Forum for Contemporary Art. That chance meeting sparked a 30-year commitment to teen arts programming by the institution that's now known as the Contemporary Art Museum. CAM is celebrating the milestone of these youth programs with an art exhibit titled We Find Ourselves, 30 Years of Teens Making Art, which is open through February 8, 2026. Joining me in studio is the founder of the initial program, New Art in the Neighborhood, Roseanne Weiss. Roseanne, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you for having me.
We're also joined by Juan William Chavez, a working artist and founder of the Northside Workshop. He's also a former teen participant in the New Art in the Neighborhood program. Juan, welcome to you as well.
Thanks for having me.
So, Roseanne, you directly worked with teens for the Forum of Contemporary Art, and you founded the New Art in the Neighborhood program back in 1993. How do you remember those days? And when that first group of youth walked through the door, what did you and your colleagues think about their interest in contemporary art?
Well, we were thrilled, of course. I mean, I think that our job was really to blow open the doors of the museum and make it part of the neighborhood. At that time, we were over where Jazz at the Bistro is. Mm-hmm. That was our building. And we did not have any youth programs whatsoever. And my job, I was tasked by the then director, Betsy Millard, to look around and see what other people were doing and figure out what we should do. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I discovered is that everybody had programs for little kids, and they didn't have programs for teenagers. It was very tough to find arts-based programs for teenagers. And obviously, I think it's because teenagers are a little more rowdy, right?
Okay.
Which makes them more fun, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But so I had no experience. I mean, literally no experience as an arts educator. I had been an art dealer. And Betsy hired me because I had a lot of marketing experience. But she also needed someone to do the education programs. Mm-hmm. So looking around, doing some research, we discovered that teenagers were underserved. And lo and behold, there were a group of teenagers came in one Saturday through a program called St. Paul Saturdays that was at a church. And they were great. They had all kinds of questions. We had a great time. They were so engaged. I can't remember what the exhibition was, but they were very engaged. And that was it. Then I started talking to school counselors, not the art teachers, the school counselors, mm-hmm. about who the kid in the back of the math class who's getting in trouble for doodling was, and could we get them into a program.
So given that you did not have experience in arts education and that you're talking with teens, was there something at once like thrilling and scary about going into this?
That is a good description. However, I had a partner. So Sarah Birdsall, who at that moment was Sarah Spur, was taking a sabbatical from Washington University. Sarah's a terrific human and wonderful artist who works in design. And she was very interested in doing something with us at the Forum for Contemporary Art, and I grabbed her. Literally. It was, Sarah, I need somebody who knows something about education, how to create a curriculum. And she helped us put this program together and was there at the beginning for every Saturday. It was terrific. She gets so many kudos for setting this all up with us.
Now, speaking of beginnings, Juan, you participated in those early years of this teen programming at the Forum, and you were a high school freshman at mm-hmm. the time. Mm-hmm. This is 92. I think that in popular culture, contemporary art was often portrayed as being very snooty or inaccessible. What did you think about contemporary art as, I mean, like a 14-year-old?
Yeah, I mean, I think curiosity was definitely the word that comes to mind. You know, I grew up in the Skinker to Bolivar area, so going to Forest Park and St. Louis Art Museum, looking at contemporary art there, there was a lot of you know, challenging artworks that, you know, I questioned, that made me curious. And yeah, and so the opportunity to like go to a contemporary art museum and for education, you know, you'd walk through the gallery before you'd go into the back room. You would see sometimes the artists there. And it was just, you know, I was just very curious, you know? And I think that's the word. I didn't judge it, but I was like, what is this? Mm-hmm. How are they doing it? And it seems like I want to be a part of it.
Yeah. How did it feel to participate at that time? I mean, was it like, oh, this is something for kids, this is something for teens? And in the way that sometimes happens with young people, that it was like made for a certain age group? Or did you feel respected in that age period?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I was notorious for dropping out of art classes.
Notorious?
So, yeah, notorious.
Oh, okay.
Probably for a handful of reasons. Maybe not being challenged enough, not being stimulated. But also, I was incredibly shy, and just, you know, expressing yourself is a courageous act. You know, you're vulnerable. And, you know, are the people in this room making me feel comfortable to do that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, no shade with the other classes that I took, but I always just dropped out. And there was moments of New Art in the Neighborhood where, you know, I didn't know if it was for me or not. And I definitely missed a couple of classes, but, you know, Roseanne always, you know, reached out and, you know, made contact with my family, and, you know, they did a good job of like, why don't you just give this a second chance? So I never really gave up on it. But yeah, there was a little bit of, you know, kind of getting settled in. And once I did that and became comfortable with, you know, the teachers and my classmates, it became really rewarding. You know, I kind of just like, you know, I found that kind of confidence and was able to really like, you know, take the ball and go with it. I kind of remember the earlier sessions, we did more like art exercises, but then I don't know who came up with it, but we rallied around this major project. We were going to design an insert to go in the St. Louis Postage Badge. So this wasn't something that was going to stay in the classroom. It was going to go out in the public. And when that project kind of was introduced, I feel like that's when the magic of like contemporary art coming together as a group, you know, listening to artists that were older, and then, you know, just the forum did a great job of being like, hey, we got a place for this. It's going to be in you know, the newspaper. So it was kind of nerve-wracking too. So it was definitely like went beyond a normal assignment that I would encounter in any type of like art class that I previously like signed up. It was different and it was exciting.
Mm-hmm. So if we fast forward 20 or so years, we have our third guest who's here entering into the picture, and that guest is Miriam Ruiz, who is the Contemporary Art Museum's Education Manager. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So the work that you have done involves leading art reach, and that puts CAM professionals on the campus of partner schools, and this particular program was founded in 2017. You heard Juan talk about dropping out of art classes and sort of some of the ways that I think is natural for people to disengage, particularly when they're at a particular point in their lives. When you started with Art Reach, how was meeting students where they were helpful to keeping them engaged?
Right. So with ArtReach partnership, we started at Vachon High School. So at that time, they had about 5 years where they were having a difficult time keeping an art teacher. So I wanted to shout out Kelvin Carter, who was the interim principal, who asked us to come in and help them build the art project. And so what you had at that time period is a lot of students who hadn't ever had art before, and that is largely still the case, or very limited art. And what you find is that they have a very narrow definition of what art is. And that was the same then as it is now.
For instance?
So, for instance, you have an artist come in who wants to share a graphic design unit with them, a very useful thing for their futures. I mean, my goodness, there's still money to be made there. Mm-hmm. And you still have students who are kind of a little bit pouty and say, this isn't art, it's on a computer. So what you find is that there is a limited access to what art can be. And there, I think there is an increasing distance between the fine art world and what we perceive as art. And so that I think one of the great things what we are doing is letting students know that what contemporary art is, which can feel like this very rarefied, esoteric thing, is actually this very accessible thing that is even more accessible than the Mona Lisa, because the context for it is you. Mm-hmm. You are living in that context. I wouldn't say that we always convert them into being contemporary art lovers, but we definitely have a lot, we're given the ability to be more creative in the way that we introduce contemporary art to them, you know, whether it's design a tattoo or, hey, you can do this graphic design piece, but we're going to put it on a t-shirt for you. So then it taps into their interest in fashion. There's a lot more freedom than maybe a typical art class offers. And it pulls in some of those students who are the back of the classroom doodlers.
Mm-hmm. And the shy ones.
And the shy ones.
Yeah. Then when it comes to the museum, I mean, museum itself as a term, I think comes with some baggage and a little bit of an intimidation factor. How has, or how have these 30 years of teen programming, how have they educated and inspired the museum?
I think one of the most material changes that I noticed is originally when I started at CAM, there were a few shows that would happen in the single, what we now call Education Gallery 2, and that was designated as the student gallery space for New Art in the Neighborhood, LEAP, and Teen Museum Studies. But the rest of that space was largely unused. And I think dedicating more and more over time, starting with Roseanne, and then it's just been this sort of evolution. You now go into that second floor. It is a library space that is asking people to sit and stay. The alcove that was originally just a place for a few books and two couches has now been transformed into an additional education gallery space. The entire mezzanine, you originally had nothing on it, and now it is used as another gallery space or another space for community shows. So it's part of this like ongoing evolution that CAM has been going through, just embracing more and more of the community on our walls.
Mm-hmm. We need to take a quick break here, but we'll be back shortly to continue this conversation about 30 plus years of commitment to teen arts programs in St. Louis. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio. Welcome back. Let's return to our conversation about 30 plus years of teen-specific arts programming at the Forum for Contemporary Art and now at CAM. We're speaking with Miriam Ruiz, Juan William Chavez, and Roseanne Weiss. Miriam, when you walk into CAM and first see, you know, we find ourselves this exhibit, there is a quilt that was created in 2025. Who made that quilt, and why was it important to kind of start with that?
So that quilt was made under the instruction of young Ivan Anguiano, who was one of our resident teaching artists, and the students of Ashan High School. There were actually two pieces that we show in Education Gallery 1 that represents, if you go into Gallery 2, you will notice along the top of the gallery walls, it's a timeline. And we started with 2025 and started working backwards. honestly, mainly that was just curatorial decision for everything to fit and make sense. Mm-hmm. But starting with that quilt in particular is, first of all, it's colorful, it's beautiful, all of these different squares made by different students patched together. But it was also in conversation with another show that's showing along the mezzanine, to speak to our early conversation, Access's Invitation, which was curated by my colleague Alexis Kramer. And that is another part of that evolution, which is more community outreach. So they have a lot of quilts that were made by Central Baptist quilters. And it just seemed so fortuitous that I wanted that quilt to be in conversation that these Central Baptist quilters were having and showing off their work that they make, you know, just a few blocks away.
Mm-hmm. And Roseanne, conversation. What kinds of conversation were going on among some of those early participants of the teen programming, New in the Neighborhood? How did that become part of not only what the students were producing, but what they were experiencing about art?
Right. So, you know, it was a very interesting time, as all times are, but that was particularly sort of the heyday of hip-hop and rap. And many of my students would play these works for me, and it was not, of course, in my lexicon, right? And we would use that as a jumping-off point. The other thing that we did was Jane Ellen Iber, who became the poet laureate of St. Louis, was a faculty member for New Art in the Neighborhood, and we would bring Janie in, and she would work with them creating poems. And then we would use those poems, again, as a jumping-off point for making work. We also thought of this as a pre-professional program, so that there was never any talking down. You know, they were participating in what we were doing. We were very lucky because the artists, people like Kara Walker and Dawood Bey and Enrica Chagoya, would do a Saturday with them. So, you know, they would go and have these experiences with these artists who then became very well known. Mm-hmm. You know, so their conversations were adult conversations about what was going on in the world and how to express those things.
Juan, the experience that you had as a teen and the work that you do today, and then there's all that time, right, in between, have you found yourself revisiting some of the themes that either you were creating art around or that your peers in the program were making?
Yeah, definitely. It's interesting, you know, I'm 48 now, and when I look at all my art projects that I've done over the years, they all, you know, you can kind of start comparing, and you definitely see repeating themes and characteristics, and, you know, definitely some of those go, you know, were born at New Art in the Neighborhood, for mm-hmm. sure. Speaking of Jane, one of the great things about the, you know, when teachers would come in, you know, we weren't just making art as an end result, but we were also talking about process. And I remember one assignment was like, if you have a roadblock, you know, go do something else and think about it. So I think they like locked us. They didn't lock us, but there was this freight, this really, really beautiful freight elevator, and they stopped at mid-floor. And just doing something differently, it was a brainstorming exercise. I always remember that, and I still kind of use that tactic of like, do something different, you know, go, you know, mix it up. Go into a space that you haven't really been to, and, you know, and ideas always flow. So that's like a technique I still use to this day, you know, minus the freight elevator.
Yeah, okay. That's my follow-up
yeah,
question.
Minus the freight elevator. But in other examples, like go for a bus ride or go for a walk. You know, it's just really helpful artist-to-artist process type talk. But, you know, but more concrete was the newspaper that we made. You know, this was a big, you know, my career is I'm a social practice artist, you know, so kind of coming together and contributing to a paper that we designed and then got inserted. And then, I mean, it was labor intensive, it was process intensive, but the result was so like rewarding. And just being part of that group, you know, as an artist, you're an individual making, but artists need to collaborate. They need to be with other like-minded individuals. And then to do that and to print it, I remember, like, you know, when it was printed, the following weekend I was at a party and someone put it on the mantle. And I thought they were going to, like, make fun of it, but they were all, like, thought it was so cool. And it really kind of just, I was like, oh, that's kind of like my first reaction that I've gotten from something that, you know, that went out in the world. The things that I do right now, I always like to say that it only takes giving a young person some space and just saying, you know, you can do this. You know, that's all it takes. And then, you know, they can take the ball and run with it. So I do a lot of that at my nonprofit. I work with a lot of different people, all different ages. And I'm basically saying, like, you can do this, and I'm your cheerleader. Here's the space. You know, let's experiment. Let's do this. We also make knowledge sharing zines. In a last project I did, I ran an artist-run space that also had a publication. So publishing other people's ideas and thoughts has always been something that I kind of carried, and I still do it today. And I love working with people and, you know, putting it in a zine or a publication or writing about it. Because I definitely see the power in that, you know. You don't always have to hear from the artist as the, like, authority, but it's always super important to get all these different perspectives. And I think that was just a great thing about the class. You just heard from everybody's kind of perspective. If they're into fashion, you got that. If they're a drawer, you got that. If they're into, you know, making stuff with their hands, you know. And it all, like, influenced you. So, you know, definitely I like being in that type of environment.
Mm-hmm. Roseanne and Miriam, hearing what Juan is saying as someone who was an early graduate of teen-specific arts programming, how much of what he is saying is, you know, is the goal for the future of youth arts? Miriam?
I think challenging young people to step up and to enter into conversations with their voice is definitely the goal. I wouldn't say being a full-time artist as an occupation is the goal, because that's not feasible for everyone. Not everybody wants to do that. Mm-hmm. But if I have students walk away feeling comfortable in a museum space and feeling that it's a space that is for them, and if they walk away with something that they can do, I think everybody should make. There is creativity in all of us, and I think there's been numerous studies. It's so good for us. But if they walk out of there and, you know, on a Friday evening after a long week, they're like, I can draw this. I don't even need to show it to anybody, but I'm going to just draw something and feel comfortable, and it's going to make me feel better, then that is a victory as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm. Roseanne, you've had the opportunity to see many of these graduates, and there are thousands of them, in St. Louis, kind of doing their thing. Did you think that this would be the result of what was started back in the early 90s?
It was the hope, mm-hmm. right? So, and I'm thrilled to hear Juan talk about it, although I don't think we ever told the parents about the freight elevator. But what that shows is that we had fun as well, right? The museum was their space. It was their space. And it belonged to them. And I think that lesson is incredibly important. The other lesson, I think, is that, you know, we thought it was important enough to get the newspaper to do something about it, right? That we thought this was not just kid art. This was art. And I think that's incredibly important. You know, it's what I wanted was for people to feel like they had a relationship with us, that we were consistently there for them. And I think that that was actually part of the key, is that we were there every Saturday. Mm-hmm. You walked in the door, I would be standing there, right? And so even if you didn't want to be an artist, you knew it was a place and a community for you where you could be creative and you were valued. And I think that's part of the whole thing of creating programs for young people.
Mm-hmm. Miriam, we find ourselves reflects on the last 30 years of teen arts programming at CAM. In moments of upheaval and turmoil, arts programming is often the first thing that is cut. How do you feel about the future of youth art education and programming? You know, as people walk into CAM, what do you want them to pay closest attention to?
I want people to recognize the fact that art is for everyone. That enriching someone's life doesn't need to actually result in some sort of financial gain, that it can just be a quality of life improvement. This is worth investing in. It doesn't matter if the students want to make a career out of it, can turn it into a lucrative side hustle. I know that's the way we have to market a lot of stuff to schools and to get grant funding and whatnot, but truth be told, you do it because it's good for people. And I want people to see that, and I want them to feel hopeful that there is a future where we all have access to all of these things, and it's not just, you know, the purview of a few who go to these well-funded schools and whatnot. The communities can invest in our youth, and we are all going to benefit from it.
Miriam Ruiz is Contemporary Art Museum's Education Manager. Juan William Chavez is Director and Founder of Northside Workshop and a former participant in the New Art in the Neighborhood program. And Roseanne Weiss is the former Program and Education Director of the Forum for Contemporary Art. Thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's a great conversation.
Up next, expectations around Thanksgiving and other year-end holidays can magnify already complicated family dynamics. We'll talk tips for navigating that. And we want to hear from you. Is there something causing you stress at the moment? Have you had to set boundaries with certain family members? Maybe there's financial strain that's affecting your ability to enjoy the holiday season. Let us know what's on your mind. Send us an email at talk@stlpr.org or give us a call at 314-382-8255. That's 314-382-TALK. We'll be right back. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio.
This episode was produced by Maya Norfleet.
Our audio engineer is Aaron Doerr. This podcast was mixed and edited by Aaron.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.